Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
Anyway, and this morning I'm going to talk a little bit about a man named Bangtai. He lived in 16-something. And he was a man who became very renowned and very respected. And he was preaching very quietly one day when a priest from another sect who happened to be there, because they all came to see what he was talking about, he interrupted him. And the priest was from some kind of a sect that believed in miracles and thought that salvation came from repeating words. So he interrupted Bangtai. So Bangtai stopped talking and asked the priest what he wanted to say. And the priest boasted that the founder of his religion could stand on the bank of one river and with a brush in his hand write on a piece of paper things like Namamida Butsu, you know, the holy name. The paper being held by an assistant on the other side of the river. And there it was. Huh? So this priest then, considering this as a miracle, asked Bangtai what miracles he could perform. What can you do? Only one, said Bangtai. Only one. When I am hungry, I eat. And when I'm thirsty, I drink. And when you look at that, isn't that a miracle? And of course, if coming from his place, you know, his enlightenment, his awakened state. That's going to bother me, maybe. That's is non-ego. There is not me in it. There is the I am. The I am, then, eating, and the I am drinking. That's the miracle. And it can do it because of this. Now this word, miracle, what's a miracle? The word comes from the Latin mirari, and it means to wonder. And it also means to smile. So if you're thinking of miracles, be sure you smile. But along that line, you know, we have such longings and such yearnings. We have had through our lives at one time or another, we have this longing to be somebody, to really be somebody, huh? You know, to know a little more than somebody else. Just a little, but a little more. To be maybe a little prettier or a little more handsome. Just a little, not much, just a little bit. Then I'd be somebody. To be more talented. Just a little, huh? A little more talented. To be this, to be that, to be the other. or not to be. Maybe that's the miracle. The not being in the picture. Accepting daily life as daily life. So it's hot, so it's cold. It's daily life. And we're just as ordinary as anybody else, no matter what we think we know. We're not asking for any recognition, not even wanting any recognition. And here we're following this soliloquy, we can say, there's a rub to reach a place of not wanting any recognition. Experience this existence without me. To be absent. Me to be absent. Then when I'm hungry and I eat, and when I'm thirsty, I drink. That's a miracle. Because then this is this power, eating and drinking. Know me. It is called a non-ego state. Me as ego is not there. It is absent. Now, in our search for what we first, as we're starting out, we call religion, before we actually know religion, we go out in search for the miraculous. We go out in search for the extraordinary. Somehow we get it in our heads that this marvelous teacher should appear from nowhere, like a bolt out of the blue, maybe. Just all of a sudden there's a teacher, wave his hand over my head. Recognize me for the wonderful person that I am, that other people can't really see, but he can see better, so he sees this. And lo, I am enlightened. Well, why hasn't it happened to me? Why? Well, maybe there aren't any teachers around, but there are some. But we have a tendency to search for an extraordinary teacher, because this is how we project our wish. We're going to be somebody. We've got to have an extraordinary somebody for a teacher, right? You're going to accept somebody ordinary as a teacher? Yeah. But we're thinking, with just an ordinary teacher, why, I don't have a chance to become exceptional, extraordinary. How can I become extraordinary with just an ordinary? I can't. So this teacher we're looking for must be really super duper. Really super duper. Way out of the ordinary. Feet not on the ground. You know, pie in the sky. He shouldn't eat this, and he shouldn't eat that. And wear only white or green or blue or whatever color you choose, and read only what I think is proper for him to read, and not to watch television at all, and listen to only certain kinds of music. These are all mistaken beliefs for a religious frame of mind. For an extraordinary person, you know, and how dull. You're only going to let him read certain books because these are the books that you think are proper, you know. You know, if you ever found a teacher as you believed a teacher should be, ask yourself, why would they bother with you? Huh? Why would they look at any of us? You know, we have swallowed a lot of garbage. Huh? And a lot of them are still swallowing it in the name of ego religion. Anything to boast the ego. Hmm? And it's sticky. Clinging. You know? We're all glued up. And you know what it does? It messes up any opportunity that we might actually have to come to know, because it's standing in the way. It's very difficult to get rid of something that you believe. And a belief is a thought. Hmm? Now, Meister Eckhart said, you know, the sun is so huge, it gives us life. But you can hide the sun very easily with a pebble that big. All you have to do is hold it in front of your eye and you can't see the sun. And you don't think that a thought is a little pebble in your mind? And, you know, so we're pretty well loaded with garbage. And the problem is we don't recognize it as garbage. Some of the things, of course, that we think are very necessary. But we do take off on our excursions in the sky. Hmm? Now, this great Bankai was one day working in the garden, this little temple garden. And a visitor came. And he was a seeker. And he was in search of a master, in search of a teacher. And he wanted a real one. So he comes into the courtyard there, and he sees this gardener. And he approaches him, and he asks him, Gardener, where will I find the master? Oh, Bankai looks up at him and he says, well, if you go over there, around the building, excuse me, there is a door. And you come through that door into the temple and you will see him there. Hmm. So the visitor goes outside and he goes around and he finds a door and he comes inside and he gets inside the temple. And there he sees Bankai sitting on this high seat, you know, which they sit in over there. The same man who was gardening. And he says to him, are you kidding? You know, this is sacrilegious. You're not showing the proper respect for a master by pretending to be one. Hmm? So Bankai got down off the seat and he sat on the ground beside him. And he said, now then, this is difficult. This is difficult. You will not find the master that you are seeking here, because I am the master. And it was very difficult for this man to see this. A master, a teacher, grubbing in the garden? You know? And so he left. This is how difficult this is for us. Huh? He couldn't believe this state of affairs. And you know what? He missed. And his whole life, he missed. He had a tremendous opportunity, and he missed because he couldn't get rid of an idea. You know? What is it that is in us that makes us so sure that we're right? We seem to have no room for doubt. Our ideas are always correct. Hmm? Hmm. What have we experienced that would show us that our ideas are correct? What is it in us that when we meet, say we met a teacher, what is it in us that says, oh, this person is a master? or that person is not a master. What is it in us that says this? And of course, he's not a master at all if he doesn't think like I do. No. And then, you know, we never seem to ask, who is teaching whom? Are you going to teach this teacher? That's the way some people act, you know. If you choose someone as a teacher, then listen. And you get your own ideas and your notions out of the picture. Just listen. Listen like you were a blank tape recorder. We have tied a lot of stumbling blocks around ourselves. And because of that, these stumbling blocks, we keep missing and missing and missing. Down deep inside, you know, sometimes we're very sick and tired of ourselves. But on the surface, oh, you should know what I know. I know, too, it's very difficult. It is a very difficult task to set aside the ideas that we have held for a long time about religion and what religion should be. But you know, now and then we could try it. Just try it, you know, 2 minutes here, 2 minutes there. Now, Bankai was different. Never knew you there. Yeah, try it again. what he taught, and he had some really tremendous experiences, and he was awake by the time he was 13. People weren't sure what it was that he was teaching. They didn't think it was Buddhism, and they didn't think it was Zen. But toward the end of his life, he emerged from all these questions. Beverly has got something. Thanks. He emerged as a celebrity. We're not a banana ring, thank you. He had huge crowds come to listen to him. And they came from all over Japan. He had this huge temple at one time, and the people overflowed, and they had to build another building. And some people came to listen to the teachings, and some came because they had personal problems. Somebody would come because he had trouble with his meditation. A farmer might come because he was afraid of thunder. And a man came, maybe now and then they would come because he had a bad temper. What to do with a bad temper? You know, he's the one that they tell that story about, that the monk came to him and said, he complained, you know, of his very bad temper. So Bankai says to him, you should show it to me. Show it to me. And the monk said, but I don't have it now. Well, so Bankai said, well, then it doesn't belong to your true nature if it just comes and goes. His Bankai system was to deal with things as they are. You have faith to have a faith in the what is called the original mind, the mind that you had before you were born, the mind that you will have after you die. Have faith in one's original mind, which we can't do if we've got blinders on. If we are attached to words, attached to my way of thinking, how are you going to see this original mind? So we make it very difficult for ourselves. And you know, there are a lot of people that do not realize that they have identifications and attachments. They don't realize it. They don't realize that thoughts are just thoughts. That's all they are. They govern you, but thoughts are just thoughts. How can one understand the truth if all one understands are words? There is a reality to know. There is a reality to experience. One experiences one's original mind, and then you rely on it. You rely on it. Now, instead of saying original mind and this and that and the other, Bankai used the term unborn. It was never born. It never dies. It is the unborn. The teaching of the unborn. Now, the unborn is something that everybody has. You came in with it. It's not something remote, and it's not something mysterious, but you're functioning with it now. Here, now. It's alive. You're alive. It's alive. And he called it marvelously illuminating and smoothly managing everything. All you need to do is get out of its way. It smoothly manages everything. What everyone has from their parents, innately, we are born with, is this original mind. But since the parents fail to realize this, we become deluded. And then we display the same delusion in raising our own children. Because of this delusion, a person abiding in this original mind at birth, because of how he is reared, he turns into a first-rate unenlightened being. Now, this original mind, or they call it in Buddhism, they call it Buddha mind. And in Christianity, we could say, let that mind be in you, which was in Christ Jesus. The original mind is unborn and marvelously illuminating. Brighter than a mirror. There is nothing that it does not recognize. The forms of everything you see pass before it and reflecting. The reflection appears in the mind. From the beginningless beginning, this mirror, mind, is without conscious intent. It has no intent. Unborn mind has no thought of rejecting, nor does it have any thought of not rejecting. Has no thought to remove, has no thought not to remove. And there are so many things that we say that we know. If suddenly in here someone begins to cough, as I just did, you recognize it. You hear someone laughing, you recognize it. You say, I recognize it. The bird is singing, that you are listening. These are all reflections on the unborn mind. Unborn mind, I like that. And it's, you know, it's true that teachers will very often pick out a phrase or a word, and they'll use it for a while. We have this, it seems like every session, summer session that we have, we pick out some other kind of phrase that seems to do for that particular time, huh? And, you know, this one we have, only don't know. Do anything you want to do, only don't know. If you don't know, you will not be filled with pride. You just don't know, only don't know. Bankai's statement was be stupid. Be stupid. And from here on out, you know, just be stupid. You know that even if you're stupid, and even if you don't, only don't know, you know, when you're hungry, you'll ask for something to eat. And when you're thirsty, you'll ask for something to drink. And when it's warm, you'll put on thin, light clothes. And when it gets cold, you put on heavy clothes and more of them. It just, you know. As far as your daily activities along that line, you won't lack a thing. Not a thing. But you see, what it leaves out, this be stupid and only don't know, is our cleverness. You know, and we like to be clever. Oh, our thing is to transcend this cleverness, this clever person here, huh? And the thing is, some of these clever people the world holds in great esteem. You watch them sometimes on TV. They're so deluded with their own cleverness. All these words that they use, it just, you know, they distort, and that original mind is really obscured. Now, so what he meant by this be stupid, you know, isn't the stupidity of stupidity or the stupidity of not understanding. That he didn't mean at all. It's like ignorance. You know, it's used in the same way. Just be ignorant. That which transcends mental understanding, ignorance, and stupidity is what he meant by stupidity. See, I like only don't know better. Just only don't know. Sometimes it's only don't think. Only don't know. But, you know, but we have been very caught in so much that has been written about the teaching. We have the great esoteric tradition. The masters and the rays. And What else do they have? They have lots of things in there, don't they? Letters mysteriously all of a sudden in front of you. Being led here, being led there. All kinds of things. And then in the midst of this, we come across this reincarnation. What reincarnates? What is an incarnation? Shouldn't there be an incarnation before there is a reincarnation? We could be a little logical with it. Then there is another view of this. And it's in this little story, there was this visiting monk. And he is asking his teacher, if one truly realizes the unborn after the four elements, which are earth, water, air, and fire, the four elements of the physical body have been dispersed, will one be born again or not? That's a pretty good question. If when you die and you recognize the unborn, will you again have an incarnation? Whoever the you are. And Bankai replied to this, in the place of, is what he says, in the place of, in the position, in the place of the unborn. Excuse me. The whole question of being born or not being born again is irrelevant. Makes no matter. Makes no matter at all. This is, you see, in the recognizing the unborn, there would no longer be an ego. And it's the ego that wants to go on and on and on. Then we have the same thing with the word karma and all the rest of the problems that we've taken upon ourselves. And to all of them we can say, in the place of the unborn, in that position, in that place, in the unborn, has no bearing whatsoever. It doesn't. And in one sermon, this Bankai said, it is wrong for us to breed a second mind on top of the mind you already have by trying to become unborn. From the very beginning, you are unborn. People talk about fundamental principles of the unborn. There is nothing like that in the unborn. It doesn't have a fundamental principle. If it had a fundamental principle, it wouldn't be unborn. This unborn is beyond becoming, which we do every day, and it is beyond our attempting to attain it. Has nothing to do with our conditioning, has nothing to do with our thinking. It has nothing to do with our desires. It has nothing to do with what we want. The unborn is totally unconditioned. When you listen, you talk to yourself. That's your conditioning. That's why they say, just listen. Like a tape recorder. A tape recorder is blank. You listen, not talking to yourself. You just listen. You make no commentary. Yes, this is right. No, that's wrong. You just listen. And this unconditioned, which is present, over which we have put all of our conditioning to live in this world, the unconditioned is also called pure consciousness. People want to be pure, and they don't eat this, and they don't eat that, and they won't do this, and they won't do that. Just get rid of all those wants. Get rid of all the I wants this because of that. Get rid of the conditioning, and there is pure mind. That's how simple it is. And that's how difficult it is. You know, because there was one day a woman asked this Bankai, I have heard that because women bear a heavy karmic burden, and in some sects they do look at women that way, women are second-class citizens, and an Eastern thing that women bear a heavy karmic burden, so it is impossible for them to realize the Buddhahood. Is this true? She's asking him. Bankai looked at her and he said, from what time did you become a woman? This is an identification. And they had a thing on TV one night, several months ago, about how we train children to be masculine or to be feminine. We train them so they are identified as a woman or identified as a man. Rather necessary in this world to some degree, but at the same time, unborn is neither. So from what time did you become a man? From what time did you become a woman? Bankai's unborn. The unborn, the way it is, it just flows, and it flows with nature. It doesn't, our minds are fragmentary. A little bit here, a little bit there, and a little bit, there are all these fragments that we deal with all the time. It never presents us with a whole picture. And we're always sitting there trying to figure this out. And if I can just get this little thing in here now, I'll know it. But the little thing is so elusive, of course. Fragmentary mind, because it cannot see this whole picture, manipulates. We manipulate ourselves. And so, of course, we try to manipulate others at times. Manipulation is a big problem. This conditioned mind, because of it, we don't see actually what is present. The mind projects the image that is formulated, not what really is. The fragmentary mind really doesn't allow us to hear what's being said. It interprets, so it can put it in little niches, little boxes. Then we say we can understand. Even in our dreams, this conditioning plays tricks and manipulates. And we have a sensor, you know, that is here very active consciously and doesn't allow certain things to come out. So we can't really, in a way, view ourselves clearly. And along that line, there's this little story about two men that were having a coffee break one morning, and they were discussing their dreams. And one of them said, "You wouldn't believe the dream I had last night. You know, I went to Coney Island, and oh, the delicious ice cream, and such a marvelous dinner. It was just fantastic. Never in my life have I had such good food." And the other one looked at him, he says, "You're kidding. You call that wonderful? You know, last night I had a dream. And I dreamt that I was with Elizabeth Taylor and Marilyn Monroe, one on each side, huh? And he was going on telling about what was going on with Elizabeth Taylor and Marilyn Monroe. And the first man got very excited, you know, and he said, 'Why didn't you call me?'" And the second man said, "I did." "But your wife said you'd already left for Coney Island." See, the content of the conditioning, the content of the psyche, the content of the mind. Oh, a lot of it we don't even see. You know, we take care of the body, we take care of the food that we eat, and we take care sometimes of what we read and what we watch on television. But what about this content in the psyche? Yeah, who deals with that? How are we going to dispose of it? How are we going to set it aside? Banga, you know, he's saying there's only one miracle. Allow nature to have its course. And we don't like that. We interfere. And the more you interfere, the more you manipulate. And the more you can manipulate, the more that you feel that you are somebody. Look at what I know. Manipulation, huh? Look at what I can do. Maybe people don't say that, but that's how they act. And of course, actions actually show what's going on, much more so than words. Sometimes we meet people that are what are called ascetics. You know, they have certain rules that they follow. And they have very refined egos. Even those people who are partial ascetics, you know, they have very subtle, shining egos. It's very elusive to them. They feel they don't have any. But it's very obvious to everybody else. They are the interferers. They have suppressed. And it's like they drop everything down into the basement. And then they put a lid on it, and then they stand on the lid. And now I can be somebody. Huge egos. Whoosh. But very hidden from them. Because they don't understand ego. Actually, everybody's got an ego. You can't function without it. But it doesn't have to be such a shining one. Huh? So people do ask, you know, how can I drop my ego? How will I drop it? Well, who's going to drop it? Yeah. If you drop it, then, you will be the ego. Well, who are you in the first place? Ego, huh? When we try to suppress the ego instead of understanding it, the ego pretends egolessness. And you know, when people are like that, all I can say is, what a rip-off we do to ourselves. Really. You know, this state of egolessness or non-ego, it is a state of consciousness. It's not a thought. It is a state to be realized. Now, in the Garden of Eden, the serpent said to Eve, you know, this is the only fruit, showing her the apples on the tree, you know, this is the only fruit worth eating. And that's why God has prohibited it. He's forbidden it. If you eat this fruit, you will be as gods. And of course, we're hearing this, you know, she's going to be somebody. She couldn't resist it. And so she persuaded Adam. He's going to eat it too. Adam did try to say no. But, you know, when there's a problem of choosing between your wife and God, the wife is right here, and she can make lots of trouble. God is far away. Someplace else he's hiding. She's here. You choose your wife, of course. Or husband, as the case may be. So Adam took a bite of the apple. And the moment he did, he became aware that I exist. Immediately, I exist out of the garden. That should tell us something. Now, the people who think they have no ego, why are they not back in the garden? It's right here, you know. And it is a state of consciousness. This I exists. Has thrown us out of this miraculous world that you are in. You are in the garden. You've never left it. But the I does not allow you to see the miraculous world of the garden, this marvelous state of consciousness. So we have this separation. And this is the basic separation, you know, that psychology uses as, you know, we've cut off God. We have separated ourselves from the garden and God. And this is why we have guilt. We didn't do right by him. So we separated ourselves from the garden and from God by saying, I. We separated ourselves from the very natural phenomena. We are a part of this universe, and everybody will agree that we're part and parcel of this. But in actuality, to actually realize it, not just knowing it in some words, but to live in this universe, you know, and flowing like a river, and flowering like the trees, and singing like the birds, and dancing like the leaves in the universe. This marvelous universe, and nothing separate from anything else. Separation comes with the knowing that I exist. And my, we are so attached to this I. We have built up all kinds of concepts because of it. If we could have, instead of I, if we could have original mind in its place, our world would be entirely different. Now, at the time, it was in 1693, somewhere like that, and Bankei was dying. And he had already been the Kansho at Mushinji, and he was one of the six. He was one of six out of all of them, out of 218 or whatever, that is especially revered. On his deathbed, he is. And his disciples, his main, his attendant, and the other monks, they're close to him, are gathered round, and they're very worried. What should we do? What should we do with the body? Should we preserve it? Should we burn it like the Hindus do? Should we bury it like the Christians do? What should we do? We don't know what to do. So Bankei is lying there, and he opens his eyes, and he says, let me die first. Then you can do what you like. But just don't jump ahead. The dying has to come first. But you know, our minds want to know the end. They want the goal. So it jumps ahead. It jogs way out in front. What you should do is just jump on the same ground. You don't jump ahead. There was a minister at one time, and he had invited some people to a garden party that he was having. And he suddenly remembered that he had forgotten one little old lady. And so he phoned her, and he was really beside himself, because this little old lady was dangerous. She had a sharp tongue. She was very religious. And he was a little bit afraid that she would cause a lot of trouble. She was a staunch member. She contributed regularly in his congregation. But she could be a hell on wheels, as they say, a troublemaker. So he phoned, and he invited her to come. And he said, forgive me for not inviting you sooner, but you must come. And this little old lady said to him, it's too late, I've already prayed for rain. See? Jumping ahead. Boy, she jumped ahead, didn't she? Yeah. And try jumping on the same ground. And then don't jump so fast. Try slowing down a little bit. And then after a while, you just stand there. And then maybe finally you'll sit down. And then maybe one day you might even be here now. You know, here now is the day of the Lord. Here now. But, you know, there comes a man from India, let us say, and he shows a lot of tricks. He's a swami or something. And this appeals to us. Well, it would appeal to me anyway. I like that. You know. And he talks about the religion, and we tune our mind to this. So our minds are now, if we listen long enough, our minds are finally tuned to this. But with Bankei, he didn't go that way. All he talked about was drop the mind. You'll be unborn. You know, all these tricks, they're not really religion. They're tricks. But we like to think they're not tricks. These are miracles. See? And so seeing this and seeing that there's this religious blah, 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 blah that runs along with it, you know, oh, if I learn to do that, I will be somebody. And so we want to become a very close disciple. And we are off and running. Every day, we don't seem to realize this because we're jumping ahead all the time. We grope in an unknown. Right now, you don't know what I'm going to say next. It's unknown. You walk out of this room, and what is going to happen is unknown. You drive down the street. It's unknown. It's familiar because you've gone that way before. But you don't know but what some tree has fallen across the road or we grope. We're always groping. And we grope in the dark. Every night we go to sleep, and in deep sleep we return to the unborn. And we don't know it. We're not awake enough. When you wake up, you will know that's where you go. And you will go there consciously. It doesn't need tricks. You know, the greatest power hides the power to show off. And to this unborn, it's just only don't know. That's the miracle. Eating and sleeping and drinking is a miracle. And we have somewhere down the line, we must come to some kind of decision. We have to come to some understanding. What type of miracle we are searching for. We're either looking for tricks to be somebody, or we are looking to be just ordinary, to be a human being. No magic. Human being. The greatest miracle there ever was, or is, or will be, all in the same spot. If you can see that to be a human being is the greatest miracle, you'll go the right way. Okay? And I'm sorry for all the inconvenience of my voice today.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.